You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and today we're going to focus on a key block of voters in the United States that may very well decide the winner of this year's presidential election. If maybe they don't this year, they're going to in the future. That's guaranteed. That group is the Latinos in our country, and they are the focus of a new book called The Latino Century, How America's Largest Minority is Transforming America. It's a great book. Even if you're not interested in politics, if you're interested in culture and demographics, this is really a good book. The author is Mike Madrid. He's a partner in Grassroots Lab, a political consulting firm from California. He was also been very involved in both political parties, which I really want to touch on. But he's here today as my guest on Heartland Politics. Welcome, Mike, and thank you for taking the time. First of all, for our listeners, again, there's Republicans, Democrats out there. You've worked for both parties. Let's start there and kind of describe your background a little bit and kind of meld into what led you to write the book.
Yeah, it's a real rarity in, it was rare when I was young and growing up and cutting my teeth in politics in the 90s. It's even rarer now to have somebody who's worked on very large, scale campaigns, big campaigns on both sides of the aisle. I attribute that mostly because most of my work and focus and passion is on Latino voters. And I think as both parties have demonstrated a willingness, sometimes more, sometimes less, I've got relationships on both sides and people would come and ask me to be engaged. And the more I'm focused on the community and what's happening socially, the less the partisan, the normal political partisanship sort of introduces itself. But having said that, I'm a Republican. I've been a Republican for 30 years. I grew up in Southern California, Mexican-American kid in a Democratic home, which is very typical, sort of your traditional ethnic Catholic, working class home. Knew that I was kind of different as a Republican, from the day I registered to vote at age 18. And I kind of walked through the trajectory of how my career in public Republican politics begins in the book. And then my disillusionment with the party as the party became much more, in my terms, my opinion, more nativist and much more ethnically, racially focused. I started to see some of the same challenges in the Democratic Party that I didn't like. And there I found some very high level folks who were very interested in kind of what I was saying. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, Los Angeles mayor who ran for governor, asked me to run his campaign for governor against Gavin Newsom. And I did that. And then ultimately that led me to the Lincoln Project, where I was asked to be involved because I was just, I think, so disillusioned by both parties and saying, I think we can have an impact without being either Republican or Democrat. And I think that's what I'm doing. That's at least what I'm trying to do. And I think that might be a model of what people start to emulate in the future.
I think you're where a lot of people are. Discussions I have out here in the heartland, people really put out with the two parties. And that's what's really fascinating to me about the role Latinos are going to play coming up. But before I get into that, I got to focus on some of the myths about Latino voters. That's what struck me. I bet if you talk to 10 people, 9 of them believe some of the myths out there. And I just want to take a little time to go through these because this is important. Yeah. One is low voter turnout. I've heard that for years. Latinos don't vote. They don't care, blah, blah, blah. You kind of take that apart in the book.
Well, look, there's a lot of truth to it mathematically, but I think that the root causes of it are where the misguidedness is. First of all, it's not just an axiom in politics. It's kind of in the world. If you're not selling what people are buying, they're not going to show up to buy it. And that, I think, is really the root cause of why you have such disengagement from this voter group. Is when you've got a choice before you, which is somebody's trying to sell you and address a policy matrix that you don't buy in, and use the argument that, well, those people hate you, and that's only going to get you so far, because that may be true, but it doesn't mean that you're that much better to kind of trust you with changing my life in a better way. And that unfortunately seems to be where we're at with a lot of people, but I think with Latinos specifically, and that is in large part why it has manifested itself in lower turnout. That's the main one. But the other, and this is also very important because I'm very evidence-based and try to find a data-driven reason for why this is happening, is we have to understand that, the average age of Latinos is decidedly younger than any other demographic. Almost 40%, Robin, of our voters, Latino voters, are under the age of 30. And young people broadly vote at a lower rate than older people, for again, a lot of reasons. But there's also a poverty thread there that we've got to be honest about and talk about. And neither party really wants to address this in a meaningful way. Is it doesn't matter if you're poor and black in the Deep South, or poor and white in Appalachia, or poor and brown in East Los Angeles. If you're poor broadly, your likelihood of voting is really minimal. You're not engaged. You don't have ownership in the society. You're not bought in, and you don't see a whole lot of policy solutions for you. And all of these combined, all of these reasons combined, have materialized in the fastest growing segment of the electorate and the population. 71%, by the way, 71% of the US population growth is Hispanic in this country. It's just explosive. The vast majority, by the way, the overwhelming majority is US born. And we'll get into this in just a little bit. But regardless, you can't have a healthy democracy if you don't have a healthy economy that works for everybody because of disengagement. If people aren't bought into the system, they don't have a lot of investment in the system. And that is manifesting itself in our democracy in terms of low engagement, but also this emergent populism that is saying to both parties, we're just not buying what you're selling. And you start to see much more upheaval as a result.
The other myth, I think, is that Latinos are solely focused on immigration as an issue, and this was missed big time in 2016, and I still see that mistake being made. What are the major concerns of Latino voters, if not immigration?
That's such a
And
great question.
how do they view immigration? Work that into your answer too.
This is I might wax a little lengthy here because you're asking
That's fine.
three really critical questions. The first thing I want most of your listeners to take away is what we're witnessing is the emergence, and notice I'm not saying a shift. This is not a racial realignment. This is the emergence of a new voter group because these voters don't have a vote history in the past. These are young first, second time voters. So they're not realigning their political allegiances, but what they are doing is they're moving away from this traditional notion of non-white voters being racially and ethnically motivated in their voting behaviors to economic and pocketbook issues. These are class issue voters. And the data has been telling us that for 30 years. I mean, there's very few people that have looked at as many Latino polls as I have for 3 decades. And there's never been a single survey ever that I've looked at that has had anything other than the economy and jobs and opportunity as the number one issue ever. Immigration rarely breaks into the top five or six. And what's one of the reasons why I really like your question is because if you asked me 15 years ago, I would have answered very differently than I'm going to answer now. And that's part of this story. 15 years ago, Latinos were much more focused on a lot of those immigration and border-related issues. And the reason is because the proportion of Latino voters were much more recently migrated. They were naturalized immigrants themselves, had become US citizens, and were voting. And that experience framed their perspective of the world. The vast, ex this big explosion of Latino voters that we're seeing now are overwhelmingly third and now fourth generation voters. And this third and fourth generation voters is so far removed from the immigration experience that when they are motivated by immigration, it's usually more for border security and stopping asylum and the abuses as they see it at the border than what their grandparents or parents themselves would have viewed as immigration policy. So much so that when Joe Biden signed this executive action to basically stop asylum a couple of months ago, 69% of Latinos, Hispanics supported that measure. 70% of all Americans did. There's virtually no difference anymore. And so border security is something that both parties are going to have to reckon with you're seeing the Democrats trying to make this pivot desperately because they're realizing that the stalemate on immigration reform is no longer benefiting them, and they're going to have to move towards a more significant border security position if they're going to stop losing Latino voters. Because again, the vast majority of the growth in Latino voting registrations are happening with third and now fourth generation Latinos.
The third myth I got to hit on is, and I've heard this my entire adult life in politics too, is that Latinos are conservative because they're Catholics and they view social issues differently, and they're pro-life on abortion and blah, blah, blah. This was an interesting aspect, not only on the churches that Latinos join in the United States, but their views on these issues in light of the Dobbs decision.
Yeah, so let's talk about that a little bit, because it is a myth, and it's not only a myth now, but it's kind of always been a myth. A lot of this is not just political. Part of it is sort of the real fascinating part of Catholic culture, which is very different. You know, Irish Catholics are very different than Mexican Catholics, are very different than Italian Catholics, are very different than Filipino Catholics and Poles and on and on and on. So understanding Mexican culture, I think, is central to understanding the driver of, or lack of a driver of, social conservatism. And I try to explore this in a deep way, but easy to read way that explains that when I was a 9-year-old kid and Ronald Reagan became president, 80% of Mexican Americans were Catholic. Today, that number is now under 50%. It's falling off of a cliff, and most people believe that that is moving towards evangelicals, and there is a rising evangelical community with Latinos and Mexican Americans specifically. But for every Latino that leaves the Catholic Church and becomes evangelical, there are two that are leaving organized religion altogether. And again, a lot of this is not atypical of assimilation that we saw with those same ethnic Catholic groups we were just talking about. But having said that, even though the Catholicity in Mexican American culture and Latin culture is far more focused on social justice and community elevation than it is sort of these Protestant notions of religion where it's about abortion and marriage equality and sort of these more rigid structures of the way family, traditional families should be operating. You don't find that in Latin American culture really at all. And so the abortion issue is one that Democrats have always been afraid of. They've kind of been like, well, let's talk to these recent immigrants about immigration, and maybe the abortion issue won't come up. And then when I was growing up in Republican politics, it was always, well, you know, these are Catholics. Let's go talk to them about these social conservative issues. And even 30 years ago, I was saying, guys, it's not both of what you're imposing, your own worldviews imposing on this culture aren't accurate. It's not a good read. What I will say about abortion specifically, because it is such a hot button issue today, is because most of the growth that is happening with Latinos is third generation, it's actually a winning issue amongst Latinos now, because Latinas, Hispanic women, again, far removed from the immigrant experience, most of them are losing their religion, English dominant, English exclusive, going to college, are voting like their white peers. And for younger women, it's an extremely motivating issue. And so ironically, even though a lot of men are becoming more Republican as they reach the third and fourth generation, Hispanic women are actually becoming more Democratic, in large part because of these cultural issues.
I came away from this book, Mike, thinking that in this age of hyper-partisanship and polarization, that the Latinos may be the key to bringing us back to the middle. And because they espouse American values better than, and can articulate them in a lot of cases better than native, a lot of people I know can. Right. And I know a lot of people are going to hate to hear that. But when I talk to immigrants, when I talk to Latinos here locally, you ask them about the American dream, why they're here. It's a thing. It's beautiful what they say. They can articulate it better. Would you talk about that a little? How they're, I mean, right into the subtitle, how they're transforming democracy.
Yeah, and this really, Robin, was one of the real fast. Look, I've been working on these issues for 3 decades now. And about 2/3 the way through the book, I was realizing all of these data sets are actually pointing to something very optimistic and very hopeful at a time when the guardrails of democracy feel like they're coming off. And so many Americans feel like we're ending this American experiment. And what I like to say and convey is that these what feels like death pangs are really birth pangs. This is the pain of an pains of growth and emergence of something new that is going to actually enhance and strengthen American democracy. And when you look at it that way, I think a new understanding of our demographic transformation really comes into focus. So let me spend a little bit more time on that, because what you're asking, I think, is really just not just central to the book, but it's central to understanding why we're going through these convulsions as a country at this moment. Latinos, the average age of Latinos is decidedly younger. Two-thirds of us are natural born, U.S. born, but we are closer to the immigrant experience. And immigration, regardless of how you feel about it, immigrants come to, by their very nature of leaving something behind and coming to America, is in itself an aspirational act. It's perhaps one of the greatest aspirational acts a human being can do, is leaving their ethnicity, their culture, their family, their history, and saying, I'm going to risk all of this on the idea, the hope that where I'm going is better. And you believe that that place is better before you even get there. That notion of that's the American dream. That is the mythology of America, that anybody can come here legally, of course. We can get into the illegal part of this. But people moving to another place is fundamentally an aspirational act. And it's happening, Robin, at this moment in history, in American history, where those of us as Americans who are 65 years of age or over, the sons and daughters of 250 years of American history, have experienced an America that is the most wealthy generation we've ever produced, that those that have lived at a time of largely U.S. global hegemony, the winners of the Cold War for the past 30 years, relative peacetime. I mean, we've had wars in the Middle East that most people didn't even know were going on. And they have the most negative views of this country of any generation polled in modern history. And at the same time, there's this young demographic that's poorer, browner, younger, that is far more optimistic and trusting in our institutions and in the idea of America and this country. And damned if there isn't something romantic about that, first of all. But second, that is literally the change that the country needs to make democracy work, is the belief in it. So much of what we are fighting with and struggling with as Republicans and Democrats tear each other's hair out is the idea that America's over if they don't win. And Latinos are coming in with this weak party anchor, essentially the moderate voters in both parties, the least likely to demonstrate this extreme partisanship of any race or ethnicity, and the highest levels of confidence and trust in our social institutions. And as my good friend George Conway from the Lincoln Project reminds me, there's no constitution you can write that can protect itself from a people that don't want it anymore. And what we're finding, you can't reform your way out of that. You can't electoral college reform. You can't campaign finance reform. You can't dark money reform. None of those may all be good, you know, ranked choice voting. They all may be good reforms. We can debate those. I'm not saying they're bad. I'm just saying, even if you instituted all of them, it can't protect you from a culture that doesn't want it anymore. And what we're witnessing is that the seeds of our own success and progress and future are literally happening inside of us as a country as we emerge with this culture that brings this passion, love, commitment, optimism, and confidence in the American idea. And I think that will ultimately be our saving grace.
You pretty much talked about a quote I was going to read back for listeners, but you did a good job of it. Page 228. Talking about whites over 50 and really having had everything, but yet having a negative view, which I thought was pretty profound. So you did that just great there. I want to get to you had two chapters at the end: challenges for the Republicans and challenges for the Democrats. What are they getting wrong here, and what do they need to do to turn it around to appeal more to Latino voters?
Yeah, and I wanted to be very specific because the book, in many ways, is a critique of both parties, but it also is kind of an attaboy and pats them on the back for what they've done right and are doing right. Let me answer the question this way. The party that's able to capture the hearts and minds and votes of a multi-ethnic working class is going to be the dominant party for the next generation. The Democrats, for their part at this moment in time, are really struggling with working class voters. And it's hard for them because their whole culture and framework and view of themselves is the party of the working man. I grew up in that household. My party is working class Democrats. That's what that was what I was literally taught, is Democrats are for the working man and the Republicans are the party of the rich. And so it's not just Mike Madrid, postulating this. We have a decade's worth of data showing the working class leaving the Democratic Party because of this broader education divide. Those with college degrees are rapidly consolidating under the Democratic Party's banner. Those without are consolidating under the Republican banner. What's unique at this moment in time in American history is the working class is less and less white every year. So this education and class shift is also a racial and ethnic shift. And the way you solve that non-white shift from moving to the right for Democrats is by refocusing and recalibrating on economic issues for blue-collar workers. That's how you're going to get there. The solution for Republicans, as I say in one sentence, is just don't be racist, which is harder than you might think for a lot of Republicans. And the reason why is because the Republican Party's base voter is really animated by the threat of demographic change. It's animated by the threat of cultural change, economic change, and change generally. Republicans are decidedly more pessimistic about the future of America, which is why Make America Great Again is so retrospective. It's a look back to a better time. That's why it works so well with the Republican Party and the Republican base. And there were things that were different then. We were less diverse. There was a social order that people were comfortable with that Republicans want to turn to. But if they could just get past that and be more embracing, they would see a much more significant shift to the right with not just Latino voters, but Asian Pacific Islander voters and Black voters, which we're also seeing in polling too. And it's not a new phenomenon. It's been tracking for the better part of about a decade, certainly with Latinos, a little shorter time frame with African American voters. But you have to really understand that the stereotype that we have had as Americans of what a minority voter is, a quote unquote minority voter is going to change dramatically from now in the next 30 years from what it was in the past 30 years. Minority voters are not going to be voting through the lens of an aggrieved racial minority. They're going to be voting through the lens of an economic aspirational middle class voter.
And so I thought you were talking about you made the point, and I have to bring this up because it was a point of contention for me too, that the white educated progressives taking over the Democratic Party fell out of touch with the working class, and it was kind of symbolized by this term Latinx. Just talk briefly about that, and then we'll finish up.
One of the most fascinating things to me about the Democratic Party and observing it is, like I said, the Democratic base is animated almost entirely by cultural issues now. It's Dobbs, abortion, gun control, it is marriage equality, to a lesser extent, it's climate change, which is obviously a lot of huge economic impacts too. But it's no longer the working class, working man issues that were animating the base voter the way that it was when I was a kid, when I was growing up in a Democratic household. And so the idea of consolidating educated people who are largely immune to some of the economic shocks that we're going through right now means that they prioritize, and I genuinely believe this, they genuinely believe that having a tolerant, more pluralistic society is a good thing. I believe that. But the problem is, if you solve for the economic problems that Black and Brown voters specifically are asking for, you don't need to focus on the cultural issues. The cultural issues will take care of themselves largely. So a Latino family is saying, I'd rather have a good job in an industry that isn't being threatened by the Democratic Party than I would by you using Latinx or those types of terms to say that you're welcome here. And it's not that they're against Latinx. I just think it's just very unrelatable. Most of these cultural issues are, it's not that Latinos are against them. They're against woke or whatever. They're not. They just don't find it at all relatable to working. One in five Hispanic men work in the construction, residential construction space or related field. That is a jaw-dropping number. That just tells you how blue-collar this worker is. A lot of them work in the energy patch. A lot of them work in manufacturing and assembly lines. A lot of them work in agriculture. Iowa, you're there. You can't go to a hog slaughterhouse without it seeing overwhelmingly Latino workforce. Like, that is the essential workforce, as we learned in COVID. It's Latino. That is the future. And every year it's becoming dramatically more so. And so most of those industries view the Democratic Party as an existential threat to their economic livelihood, their jobs, their pocketbook. The cultural issues do not replace that appeal. And that's what I think Democrats really need to understand is we don't want to hear about immigration when we've been here for three generations. We don't want to hear about Latinx to kind of make it more inclusive. We want a healthy, vibrant economy that's going to allow me to support my family.
No question. I got about 20 seconds. Your book goes through a lot of key states. That's really fascinating. I don't recall, but I don't think anywhere in the Midwest. What Midwestern state do you think the Latino vote can play the biggest role in November? 20 seconds.
Well, I mean, boy, geez, 20 seconds. Let me say this. I've been doing this for 30 years. I have never been on a radio program in the heartland. So that tells you like how dramatic the transformation is happening. I know Wisconsin is a Rust Belt state. It's not a Midwestern state, but I do want to point this out to your listeners. There are more Latino voters in Wisconsin than there are African American voters. So this transformation, I say that because the transformation is happening extremely quickly. And I don't know which specifically, but I focus mostly on the battleground states. I am getting calls from the Montanas, the Tennessees of the world, again, not the heartland, where there have been 300% increases in the number of Latino voters. Got a call from Michigan just yesterday with some work that they're doing in Detroit on some economic development programs. So there's nowhere in the country anymore where there is not a sizable, demonstrable, measurable Latino community that both parties are struggling to figure out how they can make this part of their base for the future.
Okay, Mike Madrid's been my guest today on Heartland Politics. I didn't get to everything, but I'll tell you what, I'd like to have love to have you back at some point, Mike, to talk about this more fascinating topic, very important for the future. He's the author of a new book called The Latino Century: How America's Largest Minority is Transforming Democracy. Mike, thank you so much.
Robin, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for the insightful questions and love to visit with you again.
Listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK Quad Cities NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.